You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. We continue our look at how schools practice and prepare for an active shooter situation. Greg Crane is a former police officer and SWAT team leader. He didn't believe traditional lockdown drills gave students and teachers the knowledge they needed to survive. So he developed an active shooter training program. It's called ALICE, Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, Evacuate. More than 4,000 school districts have had ALICE training. Greg Crane, we hear that word lockdown, but we also hear the phrase active shooter drills. Is there a difference?
Yes. In my mind, the drill should not be repetitive of the same strategy over and over again. We shouldn't just be teaching people how to go get into a room and sit in a corner, because sometimes that may very well be the best option available to them, but sometimes it won't be. We do drills at various levels. We do verbal drills. We do critical thinking drills. And we do actual physical drills, but they're based on a stimulus, whether it be a sound, a noise, an announcement. And then, you know, based on the training that people have received, we try to observe what are their responses given their circumstances in the event. One of the big issues I had about a lockdown policy, why are we having everybody do the exact same thing? Not everybody is in the same danger. You know, we have had scenarios, not drills, but real events, where people outside the building were brought back into the building to secure in place because that was the protocol. Why there was a killer in the building? We got people being brought back inside.
Wow.
It just makes no sense at all. And so we don't give everybody a mandate. We don't tell everybody what to do. We tell them what they can do. And then with some training, with the development of some understanding of their skills and their capacity to do things that will improve their own chances, we empower them to make the decision. I can't tell you today what you need to do tomorrow. I can just tell you what maybe you can do tomorrow.
Greg Crane, so what would an effective training session be for an active shooter in your view? Could you break it down for us in terms of that acronym ALICE?
Sure. The first thing is information is key. You can't make a decision without information. We tell folks if you don't know what's going on, you should just stay put, because that means it's not happening to you. If no information about what's going on is being communicated to you, you don't know what it is. You may not even know it's ongoing. You know, if you're not getting sensory inputs, it means you're probably not in the immediate vicinity. You know, again, so you know, the alert and the informed part of ALICE are the key to people being able to make decisions. So when I work with organizations, I tell them, that's your responsibility. You know, there's going to be a 5 to 8 minute window before you have professional help on scene. Even if the possibility of, that you may have a police officer on the campus, that doesn't mean necessarily he's going to be on scene, you know, in your immediate area as quick as we need him to be. We saw it at Columbine. There was a shootout with an officer before they ever went into the building. Stoneham Douglas was not the first time that there was a hesitation just because of the confusion and the chaoticness and the dynamic of the scenario. It's not unusual for officers to be a little confused as to what to do.
So you want to alert and inform and then lock down, right?
Well, no, there is no sequence.
Okay.
And if I know what's going on, well, I'm not waiting for your alert or your inform. I already know what's going on. I'm making a decision. You know, the lockdown or securing in place, counter strategies, and evacuation, those are the three physical options that people have in these events. There is not a dictate as to, you know, or a process to go through. If I'm in the cafeteria, and many times a shooting starts in the cafeteria, I can't lock down. I can't secure in place with the guy in my room. So, you know, that's one option that's been taken away from me just because of my circumstances within the event. And so I'm reduced now to two options. Do I have the ability to get out of here, or should we be taking advantage of our incredible superiority in numbers and maybe we engage in counter strategies and try to take back control of our environment and now render it safe? The two primary ways that we will survive these events is no contact is made. That's either because he doesn't come to where we're at, or we're able to get away from him, or we take back control and we render the danger no longer dangerous. As long as he is in control and able to do what he wants to do, we will see horrific outcomes. That's just the unfortunate history of these events.
And when we talk about take back control, that leads to the question of the arming teachers, which is a feature of the president's plan for dealing with school safety and guns. So what is your view of arming teachers?
Well, my view is it does not take a good guy with a gun to defeat a bad guy with a gun. And every time I'm challenged on that, I say, go to YouTube, watch the Reagan assassination attempt. And even though all those people on the detail were armed, some of the top professionals we have in the VIP protection industry, not a single one of them fired a round back, and they ended that event in 3 seconds. And actually, the first person to put the shooter off his game was a cameraman who pushed him aside as the Secret Service agents jumped on him. They strictly used their physical advantage of body weight and gravity through their numbers. They did not fire a shot. And you look at the assassination attempts on President Ford on the rope line, or Lee Harvey Oswald in the basement at DPD, and all these high-profile events where you had a lot of people in a close proximity and you had professionals right there, no one is firing a shot in return. And the agents will tell you, well, we can't be shooting rounds in a highly occupied, friendly environment. So this whole thing of we're going to have a teacher run into that cafeteria and just start shooting, I don't know that that necessarily is the best outcome that we can try to bring about in these events in a positive manner. And it's not to say that the firearm could very well be an excellent tool for survival. My point is, history hasn't shown us that we really need it. The second floor of Norris Hall at Virginia Tech, the numbers, good guy to bad guy, was over 100 good guys to one bad guy. At the end of those eight-minute event, 47 of the 100-plus were shot, and 30 of the 47 were killed. Those are numbers that just are not real. They should never be able to achieve. One guy with a gun should not be able to achieve those kind of numbers if the people themselves are doing something to try to improve the outcome. He was able to reload his weapon 17 times.
So if I'm a fifth grade teacher or a third grade teacher and I've got a classroom of little kids, what do I do with that when we talk about the superiority of the numbers of the good guys versus the one bad guy?
There's an age, and it's a local autonomy as far as we're concerned, and typically it's about high school, maybe late junior high, high school, because that is where we see the crime is peer on peer. Younger than middle school, if a school is attacked, historically it's been by an adult.
Like Sandy Hook.
Correct. You don't want a bunch of six-year-olds maybe trying to control a 25-year-old. Obviously, that's silly. But it's not to say that we can't teach those six, seven, eight, nine, 10-year-olds some strategy that they can do to improve their situation. I equate it to stranger danger. If an adult grabs hold of a kid and tries to put him in a car, we have not taught that kid the equivalent of go sit in the corner. We've taught that child important strategic action that they can do to try to help themselves in that scenario, whether it be bring attention to the event and hopefully get some help, or just do physical things to try to break contact and run away. And that's exactly what happened in one of the classrooms at Sandy Hook. Some of those first graders, 6 and 7-year-olds, got up and ran out of the building while he was shooting in their classroom. That was not part of their training. Their training was to go sit in a corner or hide in the closet. But they did something different, and they were amongst the only survivors in that room. We need to start looking at these events and what did people do of all ages that made their survival rates greater. And let's start teaching those protocols and keep repeating what we saw in the Library of Columbine with kids sitting under tables, what we saw at Virginia Tech, people laying on the floor, what we saw at Sandy Hook, people huddled together in a little bathroom. At some point in time, we have to recognize that actually what we're teaching people can actually even make them too easy a target for these maniacs.
Greg Crane is founder of the Alice Training Institute. He trains schools, businesses, government agencies, and more on ways to react during an active shooter situation. You gave us a lot to ponder. We want to thank you for sharing your knowledge with us on Stateside.
Thanks for having me.